Let's go.
Hello, everyone. I'm Cindy Cherry. It's with my dad, Don, and my brother, Tim, and my son, Dell. He's at the controls at Don that Cherry's.
Sound good?
Yep, Don Cherry's Grapevine podcast, right? So what stood out this week for you, Dad?
Demko with Vancouver. Fantastic. He's right back. If he keeps playing, I'll tell you one thing. Everybody's got them out of the playoffs. If he keeps playing the way he did last night, it's going to be a tough. I tell you one thing, boy, they look pretty good last night. How does the team look so good? Tyler Myers got one from the point. He got the winner from the point, eh?
Yeah. It's funny. Like you're looking, and you know, like okay, you go. Toronto's going to make, and looks like Toronto, Winnipeg are shoo-ins. But after that, boy, it could be anybody could fall.
Well, Edmonton. Anyhow, Demko was the guy last night. Did it last night, and I want to talk about Calgary. My buddy Daryl Sutter is up 2-0, and I'm reading the papers and everything that he keeps the practices short and hard, just like I did. He knows what's going on. He's won the cup, and they expect him. And what would the one guy say? He said, "Finally, we had a good practice." That's all right with him. I don't mind with Daryl.
So do you consider him what they say a player's coach?
Like I don't know.
What's the difference there?
I don't know. I'd have to say I don't think he's a player's coach. He's almost a player's coach. He knows what's going on. You can't fool him.
The one thing that they said in the, after his first practice, the guy said, "We never went to the chalkboard once."
I hated that. I had a coach one time. You get up a good sweat, you'd be ready to go, and he'd call you over. You know why they have the blackboard? As Brian Kilray never had a blackboard. The winningest coach of all time with kids never had a blackboard. He hated blackboards, and I never used the blackboard either.
Well, I remember when you once in a while would go to Dell's practices when he was, you know, little, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, and you were always amazed how much time the coaches wasted at their what? How much was it an hour for ice? And the coaches would be
They do that in training camps too.
Yeah.
And what it does is look at that man teaching him. Yeah, and you have the players. Oh boy, I gotta listen to this. Go here. Go there. Go there. Go here. Do this. Do that.
But we talked about this before. It must be tough on the coaches with like Keith. Let's say, you know, Dubas and Shanahan are always watching.
Yeah.
And Harry never watched the practice.
You know, it's the funniest thing. I had to be the luckiest guy in the world. Ray Muron he used to watch all the time. He used to watch behind a glass. We knew he was up there. Even if he wasn't there, we knew he was there. But Harry never watched a practice because sometimes you go to a practice, you know that it's nothing there. Nothing you can do. Mm. And then you got to drive them anyhow because you have the owners. And
didn't one time the Bruins were in Montreal and they were fooling around?
Oh, I remember that one. We played in L.A. and it was something happened with the schedule. We flew directly from L.A. to Montreal. So I said to the guys, I said, "Do you want to just work up a sweat, you know?" Or, you know, we landed on Fridays. "Do you want to go this afternoon and have a sweat?" And so they all wanted to. So, but they were kind of punchy, eh? And little did I know, La Presse is the newspaper up there. It's a French newspaper. The guy was up in the press box and he had a camera. And I didn't know he was up there. So I let them fool around. And we were in a losing streak at the time. Now, we didn't go into many losing streaks, but we lost about 2 or 3 in a row. And they started to let on they were fighting. They weren't fighting, but they let on there and they were ripping.
They didn't know that the camera was being filmed.
They didn't know the camera was up there. And Harry flew in from Boston to see the game that night in Montreal. And he picks up the paper. And at center ice, it had Mike Milbury and Terry O'Reilly playing patty cake, patty cake, patty cake, patty cake.
No.
And this was in the paper. Here we're on a losing streak. And I knew he'd pick up the press. And, oh, boy. And it had about 10 pictures. You opened up the paper, and, you know, the middle part? Of Bruins having fun at practice.
Did you win that in the game or not?
No.
That was fodder for Harry.
And,
oh, boy.
But you know, he was the best general manager. I mean, he made a few changes in that. But anyhow, Daryl Sutter, he's up 2-0 as we speak. And I tell you one thing, boy, he's been around. He knows what's going on.
So, Dad, the other thing that there was a big thing this week and on the weekend was the Jets and the Leafs. They had a 3-game set, so what did you think of overall?
Well, let me tell you what happened there. A lot of people are watching the game and they're saying, how could the Leafs look so bad and look so good the night before? All right. Paul Maurice, who's been in the business for 4,000 years, knew that Hellebuck couldn't play any better. And you know that he's not going to play 3 in a row. But they put a Port Alberni, BC guy in, Brasson. That's how I pronounce it anyhow. Anyhow, and he was fantastic. And you know, it's a funny thing. The players will always play harder for the backup goalie if they know he's going in. They know that this is going to be a tough game. And they did play pretty good last night. I think they outshot them. I forget what it was. They outshot them. And because they worked harder. They worked harder.
So when you were in Boston, you would put Gilbert in.
Oh, poor Jilly. You know.
And would you do that? Saying, well, we're just...
I did that. I noticed it, but I did it anyhow. What I did was, say we had 2 good games in a row and Cheevers played 2 good games in a row and we're going into Philly. Well, they pretty tough going into Philly and winning. I put Jilly in. I put any time I thought we were going to lose or the chance of losing or if we're on the road, we played 3 in a row, Jilly would go in. And he set a record that it stands today.
Yep, 17 straight wins.
I think he was winning just to spite you, maybe.
Well, he didn't like me.
Oh, well, but did he have any? He had good reason to.
But you look and you go, well, who has the streak for the most consecutive wins of a goalie? You'd think, you know, Patrick Roy, or you think of Marty Brodeur, or you think of Hasek, or you would think all the great goalies, and it was Jilly, and he was
Gilbert Galore,
and he was not playing, and they weren't, you know, going into Cleveland.
And I used to throw him to the Wolves, and the players, again, getting back to Toronto and Winnipeg, they played harder for him than they did Cheevers, because Cheevers was the number one guy. They play hard then, but they play harder for Jilly, and he won 17 in a row, and that's what happened last night. Winnipeg, I think they shot him 35 because they played harder, and Maurice, pretty sharp guy. He knows what's going on. What is he, 5-1 now, I think, Brissol?
Yeah, because that's like on the internet, like when I was watching, and it said... It was announced that the Hellebuck wasn't playing, and it just like went nuts. Like, why wouldn't you play your number one goalie?
Yeah, he knows.
And just
Maurice
like
knows.
Everybody just was going bananas because, you know, they took five out of 6 points against the Leafs. And everybody's going, oh, you got to win this, and da 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 da. And
he knows. He'd been in the business a long time. And now, just to get off that for a minute, how about Lalaine going to, I mean, Lalaine. I call him Lalaine.
Patrick Lalaine, who went from Winnipeg to Columbus.
And he thought he was
Columbus.
When I heard he was going, you don't fool around with Tortorella if you don't put out 100% the whole time. And I saw somebody, I hope it wasn't Tortorella, patting him on the back. Thanks. You benched me and you pat me.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, like I was listening, I don't really listen too much to the guys on TV, but they did bring up a point that this is Tortorella's last year of his contract.
Yeah, and they haven't.
It looks like he's just, I'm just going to do what I want to do.
He's a pretty good coach.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to come back, or they're going to re-sign him? Or
I just think he's thinking that he's moving on to someplace else.
Yeah. Well, he goes somewhere.
You talk about Pat.
You know where he'd be good? You know where he'd be good? I think he'd be good in Buffalo. In a sense, he knows what's going on. And I feel sorry for that guy in Buffalo.
Kruger.
I mean, everybody else getting fired, and he keeps his job. And he was a soccer guy before, wasn't he? What'd you say?
Yeah, he coached soccer at some point, but they're just, like, you know, as you say, Skinner's got 1 or 2 goals. Eichel's got a couple of goals. He's out now for a long
time. You gave me a stat the other day.
I think they said it was Skinner and Eichel and Stahl and somebody else didn't have as many goals as Wayne Simmons.
And Wayne's got a broken wrist.
Yeah, Wayne's, he's played less games. He's making, like, you know, minimum wage, $700. These guys are up over, like, $30
million. Oh, $30 million, yeah.
You had mentioned, Dad, about patting guys on the back and all this. I can remember watching you, Coach. You never seemed to talk to the guys as much or pat them on the back, or you were pretty
different. I never, ever embarrassed them.
Well, you did pat one guy on the back when he had a good goal. You should tell that story, too.
What's that?
Bobby.
Oh, I was sort of a punk from Rochester
in
my first year. I was, American Hockey League, and Bobby Orr. I
mean, Coach Bobby Orr,
the greatest hockey player who ever lived, still. And we're in Moncton. I'll never forget this as long as I never forgot this.
First game, wasn't it?
It was my first, I think it was my first game.
First exhibition game.
Exhibition game. And we're in Moncton. And he gave the puck away. I don't know, or something. It was his fault. And everybody knew it was his fault. Holy smokes. The next shift, he grabs the puck and he goes right through the whole team and just wires it in the top corner. So, you know, I'm a coach.
Yes.
I go down. I see all the rest of the coaches going down, putting their arm around guys and patting them on the backs and everything. And I thought I'd go down and I said, nice goal, Bobby. Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Coach.
True Cherry fashion.
And he get a hat trick after
that. That was it.
And he won the scoring. What did he do? Now, let me just get this right. He won the scoring championship. Imagine that, a defenseman. Twice he won it. And he won the Hart MVP. He was the first All-Star.
Norris. The Norris Trophy.
Norris Trophy. I mean, there wasn't a trophy he could win that he didn't win. And then he went right from there. His knee was really bothering him and I remember his knee was bothering him. And he went to Team Canada, and he was the MVP there, and nobody ever saw him again. Nobody ever saw him play in Chicago. And, I think he had 19 points in 11 games there and one knee. You know, he was sort of like Marvin Hagler. One of my favorite guys of all time when I was in Boston was Marvelous Marvin. Hey, don't use the word Marvin. I call him Marvelous before.
Yeah, I know for sure. Let's talk about Marvin Hagler. We'll tell people who he is if you don't know who he is. But first, we just want to talk about our sponsor, Spreads.ca. He's a First Nation-owned online casino and sportsbook. It's tailored to Canadians. Sign up now and enter the promo Grapes, and they'll match your deposit up to $500. You get 15 spins on a big wheel to win some good money. And your first bet, sports bet, they spot you $25. So
not bad.
Yes. So
Marvin is like that.
Yes. So one of, I think, my favorite athletes outside of a hockey player, and your favorite athlete outside of a hockey player.
Oh yeah.
Was Marvelous Marvin Hagler, who was a middleweight champ for.
He won, and the last fight he had. Remember the fight he had against Sugar Ray? What a jerk Sugar Ray was. I mean, he really was. I went to his training camp. The whole Bruins team went to his training, a training camp. And, we went to Carmen Basilio. He was a great guy, Carmen Basilio. Canastota, come from Canastota, New York. The onion farmer. Anyhow, he was a great guy, and he talked. He stopped and talked. This guy wouldn't even look at us, Sugar Ray. So anyhow, he won that last fight. No, and that was the last fight.
That was the last fight. He lost a decision to Sugar Ray, and then he quit boxing and he moved to Italy and he became a big movie star.
Yeah, but, and he really looked good. He had a Fu Manchu.
Yeah, he was a big star in Boston, and everybody knew him.
Everybody knew him.
And he terrified the middleweight division in boxing.
Well, he couldn't get a shot.
He couldn't get a fight. And finally, Ted Kennedy, who was, I don't know if he's a senator or congressman, said, if Marvin Hagler doesn't get a shot, he says, I'm investigating boxing.
Well, he should have too.
And so he got a shot. And then he always had a kind of a chip on his shoulder because, he'd destroy everybody and he couldn't get a title shot because nobody'd fight him because he was a southpaw.
He's southpaw too.
So then he fought Alan Minter in London. Was an Englishman, and he just, with two, I think it went three rounds, And so, you know, he wanted to get the belt and raise the belt, and the British people started throwing bottles of beer at him. They had to rush him out of the, you know, rush him out of the ring. And then everybody who's a boxing fan remembers the maybe 2.5 greatest rounds of boxing of all time was him and Tommy Hearns.
Hitman. Boy, that was three rounds. And you talked to an old fighter, eh? Boy, what that was the best three rounds. I remember watching it was unbelievable. Hitman, they call him the Hitman. He was a big, tall guy, eh?
Yeah, and it was like, I think to me, it's really the last time that two guys like them that were in their prime. Yeah. They're both in their prime. Like every now, both boxing, you see guys, one guy's kind of not in his prime and the other guy's just coming up. These guys were the two best boxers.
And were they good?
Fighter. And Tommy Hearns was a real, like they thought he was going to box.
Hitman, they call him.
Hitman.
I thought he was a heavyweight.
No.
No, he's middleweight.
He was big enough to be a heavyweight.
Yeah, he was about six foot two.
So everybody thought he was going to box. And they just went out and they just put their heads down and started throwing them. And then I was watching an old interview with Mike Tyson, and they asked him about Marvin Hagler, and he said he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, middleweight of all time. And he says, well, didn't you think Tommy Hearns should have boxed him? And he says, no. He says, Tommy Hearns couldn't keep Hagler off him for 12 rounds.
He says,
that's why he did it. And that's the first time I heard a boxer.
Emma Firmo, remember that?
So we have a couple of stories about with us.
Well, Marvelous. He used to come in the ruined my office all the time, shake hands, and you'd only shake very soft. They didn't want you to hurt his hand. You know, the jerks are grabbing.
Yeah, some guy wants to prove.
You know,
something.
I don't mind a firm handshake, but you get every once in a while you get.
Some guy did that too at the airport.
Remember the airport, the incident
I just come from. I was carrying my bag. I remember it was in Ottawa. And I was carrying, and I don't know, we were coming from one place, and I had my suit bag, and I had the other bag. So I put my, and they shook hands. He was a security guy. He was an ex-Mountie. And he crushed my hand. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I dropped. And Ron looked back.
Because you left, and then you went back and found him.
I said, whoa, wait a minute. Let's just do this right. Because I was tired.
Right.
And I didn't think he'd crush my hand. He crushed my hand. You hear the bones cracking. All right, let's do this right. Anyhow, he did not. He was. I remember. He was a cruel guy.
Yeah, tell us about the time. The whole story. You went to see him fight a guy, an Irishman in Boston, Jim Finnegan.
Oh, Jim Finnegan. He was. Everybody that fought in Boston had an Irish name. Remember the time you and I went. And now, if you have Irishmen fighting, they don't fool around. They go out and they throw. Boom, bombs, and that's what people like to see. So anyhow, we go to the fight. Tim and I go to the fight.
We were at the Boston Gardens. And the Boston Gardens was originally, the original Boston Gardens was built for boxing.
Because it was so slanted.
Slanted, because everywhere you sat, you were right on top of the ring.
Yeah.
It had a good angle.
That's why people loved the gardens, if you're a fan. I mean, it used to be a few pillars. But anyhow, so we're sitting there, and this guy comes out. He was really heavy, really fat. He's a fat guy. And they just threw bombs, and the people just went wild. So the next fight, the two guys that could really fight, you know, pitter-pat, they were really good defensive guys. So it was silence. And about the fifth round, some guy hollered, "Bring back the fat guy!" And everybody just roared. Remember that? I remember one time he was fighting. Did I finish the story about Finnegan?
No, tell us about you.
Okay, Finnegan. Because
you guys are playing in the afternoon, and then Marvin was fighting in the at night.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. First of all, I'll tell you what Finnegan. So I noticed the first round. He was really good. And he was really he was fantastic. And this guy would be going almost knocked out. He'd pick him. He'd let him go, clear his head. Then the next round, he'd almost knock him out, and he'd hold him. I said, Marvelous. I said, I don't want to say anything, but I said, you could have knocked him out in the first round. Why didn't you knock him? And he cut him for 52 stitches. I said, why didn't you knock him out in the first round? I like to see him suffer. And how about Amor Firmo?
Well, remember the time, though, you went to see that fight.
Oh,
You stayed. you played in the afternoon, and then you thought, I don't want to drive home, so I'm just going to have a nap at the in the dressing room. And
No, I didn't have a nap. I watched our game. So I'm sitting there. So we played in the afternoon. The Bull Gang was really good. They could switch it over.
They always got their money's worth out of the Gardens. The Celtics and the Bruins used to sometimes play the same day.
So they had the fight that night. So I thought, well, if I drive all the way back to North Andover where I lived, it was about an hour, right? Well,
yeah.
I'll go,
good
about
hour.
An hour, right?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, so I'd just get home and I'd have to turn around and come back. So all the reporters left and everybody left and everybody, all the hockey fans left and everything. So I sat in the room, had a few beers, and I had one beer, I have another beer. And so I'm feeling pretty good. So I walk out and I had a beautiful, remember that blue leather coat I had on? Remember that?
The long one.
Oh, that was beauty.
It looks like almost the one Reggie Dunlop was
wearing
in the Slap Shop.
The players called me Reggie for night. What the hell they call me Reggie for?
You did look like Reggie.
Yeah, I hadn't seen the movie. So it was long. So I come out. I said, well, I'll take two beers out, you know, two in each hand. And you could go in the Boston Gardens, but you couldn't bring the cans. You could bring the...
They were in a cup.
Yeah, in a cup. So I remember walking out, and I never, ever sat down in the plush seats down below. I was always up above where they stayed stationary, the seats.
Right.
Yeah. So I got the two beers. I put the seat down, and unbeknownst to me, the seat went back up again.
That's right, because they're the newer seats that they put closer to the to the ring.
And I didn't know that. I sat down. I went right to the floor.
Oh,
and everybody's looking at me, because you know Boston Coach. So I got up and I held the cans up. Never lost a drop. And they give me standing ovation.
They give you a cheer.
Well, then there was the big time that. We were in Colorado, and this was Marvin Hagler's shot, so you figure this would have been like 1979.
No, I'm 80, I think. 1980?
Yeah, it was
80.
So he was fighting a guy named Vito Anafirmo, and Vito Anafirmo had like a really kind of weird-looking forehead, and he would cut really easy. And so we thought, Hagler's going to destroy him. Just going to destroy him. It's going to be nothing. So, Dad, we were in Pittsburgh, right? I was on the road trip. We're going to Pittsburgh, then Boston, and then. Mm-hmm. So Hagler was fighting that night. So Dad says, "I'm betting everybody $20 that Marvin Hagler from Boston's going to beat Vito Anafirmo." Oh, all right.
So they didn't want to bet.
They didn't want to bet, but Dad made them.
I made the bet.
And as you're getting off the bus, you said,
"I said, I'll tell you how confident I am. If it's a draw, I'll give you the money." Never dreaming it'd be
a draw in a championship fight.
Right? A draw in a championship fight. And it was a draw.
Oh.
And the funny thing was, this is really funny. So we're in the room and I am really steaming. Like, I'm steaming because I lost the money. I'm steaming because
Hagler lost and Hagler beat the hell out of him for 15 rounds.
It was like a joke. It was the fix was in. So the phone rang, ding, and I picked it up like the ding, and he didn't know I picked it up. Jack Valiquette, I'll never forget, Jack Valiquette was the guy phoning, and they were going to make fun of me because they were all in a room.
They're all hooting and hollering.
They're all hollering because they know. And so I'm listening, and I hear Jack say, "Jay Morty, he's really going to be mad." And he says, "And I'm phoning him right away." And he says, "And I'm the guy phoning him." And he says, "Do you think he's going to be mad?" The guy says, "Oh, he's going to be mad." I'm listening on the phone. He said, "Well, I'm not phoning him. If you guys want to talk to him, I'm not talking to him." And he hung up. And so now the next fight, Anafirmo got his eyebrows shaved. It cost him 10 because he didn't want him to cut again.
Eh? The joke with Anafirmo was he started to bleed during the national anthem.
Yeah.
And so he had plastic surgery and he had all his brow shaved down so it wouldn't cut, and they got rid of all the scar tissue. And we were actually at the fight. It was at the Boston Gardens, and they got us a box, and was about the second round.
He cut him on purpose. He butted him on purpose. He butted him on purpose. So he bleed. And then he just annihilated him.
Yeah. He cut, like, and you know, the one thing Anafirmo didn't want to do was like get cut. And did he ever cocoa bop him though?
He did it. And he could have beat him with one hand. So I talked to a guy going out, an old little guy, and I said, "Why would he do that?" And he said, "That's the way he is. That's the way Marvin is." And he's a mean guy.
Yeah.
But you know what? And he never lost a fight. He never really did. He never lost that fight to Sugar Ray. I never forgot that fight. He should have been.
Yeah, the one thing, too, I like for a lot of people who maybe a little bit younger that, and we were talking about the Tommy Hearns fight.
Yeah.
And back then, you had to go to a rink to watch the fight. It wasn't like it was on HBO yeah. or anything and you could watch at home. And it was pretty, it was dangerous going to those things.
Well, you didn't fool around there. You made your own business.
Because, like, if you go to a Leaf game, 90% of the people are rooting for the Leafs. Or you go to a Boston Garden or Philly, they're all rooting for the home
Vancouver.
Team. You, like, the Boston, we went to see Hagler Hearns at the Maple Leaf Gardens, and it was jammed.
Yeah.
And they had people in the seats, like, it was packed. And half the guys were rooting for Hagler, and half the guys were rooting for Hearns, and everybody was drinking. And it was...
The time we went to see Barry McGuigan, I think it was.
Right.
In a Varsity's arena.
And he fought a guy named Cruz.
Yeah. And so there was a guy there, a professor or something, and he had a big blibe, and he kept asking people questions. And I said to Tim, Tim, if anything happens back of us, don't say a word. I said, don't even look back, because I said... there's going to be trouble back there. And I remember you saying, why? And I said, just don't, because this guy was bugging the fighter.
He had a big textbook. And, you know, he was like, he had the attitude of, here I am looking at the, you know.
Professor
the
type.
Professor looking at the Neanderthals, the troglodytes.
And analyzing
it. Yeah, analyzing it and all that. And there was a controversial decision. The guy picked up the book.
One of the fans picked up the book and just fired it up against the
and
wall.
The spine broke and the papers went everywhere. Then it hit a guy and he turned around. Who hit me with the book? And just it all.
And I said, don't even look around, because.
Well, even at that Marvin Hagler, again, like that Marvin Hagler Tommy Hearns fight at the Gardens, like everybody was smoking and they kept saying, don't smoke, because you can't see the screen, right? Because the smoke was, but everybody was smoking. And we saw one guy that we kind of knew. Remember, yeah. he got into a fight.
He had too much to say. He was all cut to ribbons.
Guys, and the funny thing was, like, it was better than most of the prelims. These two guys were fighting, and the one guy that we kind of knew was leaning against the boards after, because they had the boards of the rink boards, but then they had seats in the middle, and he was just, blood was just pouring off him. And
he didn't fool around in those days.
I thought, well, the police didn't want to arrest anybody, because I think the police wanted to watch the fight, right?
How about Barry McGuigan, an Irish guy? He was from Northern Ireland, eh? He was from Ireland,
yeah.
Eh? And he lost the fight. He hit a guy supposed to have hit low. He lost the fight on the hit low.
Yeah.
I just going bananas. Like, you know.
Yeah, it was.
And, you know, when I think about it, they were all Irish guys in the washroom. Good job. They're all Irish guys in the, yeah. You know, because they felt the same way.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I've watched a lot of fights, like, at home with TV, you know, and like, you know, you get there and, oh, what's the Leaf game on? And you click over to see what the Leafs are and stuff. But when you were at the Gardens and having to watch it, it was almost like you were there.
I remember at the Boston Gardens, Johnny Saxon, nobody's ever heard of him now. Remember, he came in. I was way up on top. I was playing. I think I was there for. I was a standby for the Bruins or something. I was way up on top, and he came in. And I forgot who he fought, but he came in. Boy, he ever looked good, and he lost. And I remember at the fights. I just loved the fights. And let me tell you one last story about Richard and I. My brother Richard and I. We were really fight fans, and you couldn't get on TV. You could drive to Watertown, New York, and you could see them there. So we really liked Isaac Logart, and he was fighting a guy named Virgil Akins, who was about 38 years old. And we drove all the way over, and we're sitting at a bar, and we're watching the fight, and Isaac Logart got knocked out sitting on the ropes, like, you know, and it was a TKO. And we're thinking, and like two grooves. We were like two grooves. Can you imagine Isaac losing to Virgil Akins? And 40 years later, we find out Blinky Palmero owned both fighters.
Yeah. I'll tell one quick story about boxing. I've been to Vegas to see more than a few fights. So I went down to see, I wanted to go down to see George Foreman fight. Cause I, you know, and he was fighting a guy named Schultz and at the MGM Grand. So I went down and so I think a couple of us went down. So mom came down because she liked Vegas, right? Mom really liked Vegas. So we were sitting having dinner at this nice steakhouse. And guess who comes in? George Foreman. So he comes in and he's sitting at the table. And you know how before he was like, oh, I'm going to eat, you know, like he was doing still doing the George Foreman grill.
The
back.
Grill, that,
and he
yeah.
was eating cheese.
Yeah, which
and,
I bought.
Have one.
Yeah, we all have one.
We all had one.
And but he had just a little salad with oil and vinegar.
Well, he was losing weight. Eh?
So I had my ticket with me and I thought, boy, I'd like to get an autograph, right? And he was having dinner and mom goes, well, go have one. Go get his autograph. I said, mom, you know how. Dad, you know, when you're having dinner, you don't like. Mom goes, you know, everybody, how many times have we had dinner and people ask your father for an autograph? You don't mind. This is the time that you can do it. So I was thinking, nah, I said, Mom, I don't want to do it. Mom, yeah, go ahead and do it. So I said, yeah, I think I should. So I went up and I said, hello, Mr. Foreman. My name's Tim and I've come all the way from Toronto to see your fight. He was very gracious. Oh, thank you, Tim, for coming down.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, thank you for the support. That's very nice of you. And I said, you know, could I sign your ticket? So he signed a ticket for me. And I sat down and then just everybody came.
Oh.
And like, he got to get up and leave. And mom and I felt so bad. I thought, see, you know, I said, we knew that was going to happen and you had to do it. And so I have.
You know what? He probably liked it. He looked like a good guy.
He does. He was. He was, you know, he was very gracious. He said, oh, thank you for coming down to Toronto. I like Toronto. I fought, I think he says, I fought four guys there one time.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. He fought four guys at one fight. And he goes, I really like Toronto. And he was very gracious, really nice.
Because his true personality came out. Remember he had that reality show with a couple other people and people would bring their products and they would have to decide whether they would give money to for the product, sort of like Shark Tank, but way, way before that time. Yeah. And George Foreman loved every product. I'd buy this. Yep. And you are like George Foreman. You go, I'd buy that and all that. So finally they had to get rid of him. They go, George, you like everything. He goes, I do like everything. Because his George Foreman grill was the biggest of all time for info commercials. And we all went out and bought one.
Are they any good?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were before their time. Yes.
They were way ahead of their time.
They were way ahead. And so was his info commercial way ahead of. And a lot of people, that's how they knew him for, was because of his George Foreman grill.
Yeah. Well, we had even, like, we'll talk about it some other time, but we had Joe Frazier on the Grapevine Show.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had some good stories with him.
Sean O'Sullivan, fighter.
We also had George Savallo. He was really good.
Oh, George is funny.
So we'll talk about, we'll run some of those shows this summer.
Yeah.
And thing, but we should start to wrap it up, Dad. We're getting late, but we just want to say hello again to Bobby Schmatz.
Oh, my favorite hockey player. You know that his last year, I should have looked it up, but his last year he had 26 goals. And he never played again. Imagine 26 goals now. Guys get 14. They get $8 million. But he was my favorite when I was in Boston. He used to get in trouble once in a while, but he was still my favorite.
Yeah, I remember Mom and I were driving, and we were living in North Andover, and it was a bit of a windy road in North Andover, and there was this guy in a Corvette, and he was waving to us. He had the T-top open, and He's waving to us. We don't know anybody with a Corvette. And he kept waving and waving. And you could see he was getting annoyed that we weren't waving back. And then Bobby Schmatz, it was him driving, and he sat on the edge of his car, driving about 50 miles an hour through this really winding road, waving. I mean, oh, Mom goes, Schmatzy. So we waved and all that and got back. And, his car was Russ Conway, the guy that wrote the book about
Alan
Nicholson. So we just wanted to say hello to Bobby.
Bobby is one of my favorite players, and everybody knew it. And he was, like I told you, he was a straw boss. And, you know, I got asked by a couple of guys, explain the straw boss again. Okay, this will be my last time, and he was the straw boss. He was always coming up. If somebody was in trouble with me, he was always the guy coming in. And straw boss is a guy, if you have 20 laborers and he gets the same money, but there's always a leader and if you wanted those guys to work overtime, you always went to that guy and said, I like those guys, and that's what the straw boss is. And Bobby was a straw boss, and he was always, 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 if somebody was in trouble with me, he was the first guy there. He was a tough guy, but he was a good guy.